Today is Friday, the 1st of July, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. Coming your way, the British vote to exit the EU has left much of the UK in a state of uncertainty.
There's a real sense of public alarm here, a real sense of public alarm. You have some Leave voters, some people who voted for Leave, now having buyer's remorse, really. Everyone feels very confused. They feel that no one is in control.
We'll talk with VOA's Jamie Dettner in London about it all. Also ahead, a NASA probe is just days away from Jupiter, and Apple is planning to take some control of your iPhone away from you. It's all on today's International Edition. Up first on International Edition is the political fallout from Britain's vote to exit from the EU, or Brexit. Correspondent Jamie Dettner, VOA correspondent, joins us from London. And Jamie, this situation just seems to be getting curiouser and curiouser day by day on every level. Let's start with politics. With Cameron leaving, Boris Johnson now out, what's the immediate future of the British leadership look like? What's going on?
Well, it is unravelling in lots of ways. I mean, British commentators here ran out of fresh superlatives the day after Brexit, which was a week ago. So can you imagine, in all the things that have been happening in the last week and the developments by the minute, we're all looking at our Twitter feeds, even when we're interviewing senior politicians. They've really needed these superlatives. Yesterday, of course, we had this political assassination virtually as two top Leave campaigners fell out. The Boris Johnson, as you mentioned, who his campaign manager suddenly really stabbed him, as people say here, in the front, not even in the back, to run for the leadership of the Conservative Party and to replace Cameron. There are four other contenders. Really, the clear favourite, the runaway favourite at the moment, is Theresa May, the strong-willed, rather flinty, the long-running Interior Secretary, who reminds some people in the Tory Party and the Conservative Party of Margaret Thatcher. So we're going to have balloting next week for the leadership of the Conservative Party. Meanwhile, there is a complete meltdown, a civil war within the Labour Party, where 80% of the Labour MPs want Jeremy Corbyn to stand down. He's refusing to do so, and we have really no idea where that's going. But it is really a cascading effect from the Brexit vote, which is reshaping British politics and is mounting really very shortly, I suspect, to a constitutional crisis, because Scotland in a year or two could well decide to have a second independence referendum itself and could well break away from Great Britain, taking the great out of Great Britain.
How is the British public reacting to this? Is there a sense of a loss of control?
Yes, there is, and there's a real sense of public alarm here, a real sense of public alarm. You have some Leave voters, some people who voted for Leave, now having buyer's remorse, really. Everyone feels very confused. They feel that no one is in control because, of course, you've got Cameron still as Prime Minister until he's replaced. He can't really do anything. When questioned about how they will go about Brexit, he says, well, that's up to the next Prime Minister. So there isn't a sense of leadership. The only leadership that one really feels is coming from the Scottish Nationalist leader, who's the first minister in Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, who has a very clear sense of direction of where she's going, and from Mark Carney, the Bank of England governor, who talked twice actually in the last week trying to steady the markets, but saying that Britain is going to have a major downturn.
Well,
so yes, public alarm.
Well, there's international alarm, too. The latest is Germany's foreign minister, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, saying that it's time for Britain to quickly produce a timetable for when it expects to begin talks on leaving the European Union. Is that going to happen or not?
Well, there are big questions about when. The British have the right themselves to decide when the automatic two-year process of exit begins. It's called Article 50. The moment you invoke that, there is this automatic process to departure. Everyone here is saying, and when I say everyone, I mean all the Tory Party candidates for the leadership, Labour, the civil service, former prime ministers, are also saying that can't happen until the end of this year. I mean, there's no one really to talk to at the moment in power, and they've got to work out what their strategy is. There is a division amongst the Europeans. I mean, some Europeans are pressing for for a hasty, you know, clean break, which is impossible. There can't be a clean break. It is too tangled and complex to do a clean break. Others want to be patient and give the British time, and it's something that US Secretary of State John Kerry has been pushing on Europeans to be more patient. I suspect the things to look out for in the next few weeks. One, I think the Americans are going to take a stronger behind-the-scenes mediation role to try to get some process and some calmness in all of this and to bring some order, keep Britain in Europe by a free trade deal. And I think the other things that are important to watch for is whether there's any give by the British on this idea of free movement. If they want a free trade deal with the European Union is saying they must agree to free movement of people so that Brits can work in Europe, Europeans can work in Britain. That's a cherished principle. There is some idea that the Brits are beginning, even the Leave campaign is beginning to push away from the idea that they will have to reject free movement. So that's something else to watch for. The third thing which could come is that there are possibilities of legal challenges to this Brexit vote. I was talking to some very brainy academic constitutional lawyers who believe that there are two grounds a Brexit vote could possibly be challenged. It may have gone beyond the limits of the power of the British government. The motivation for bringing it may have not been in the national interest. And I think that we may start seeing some signs of some kind of legal action.
Jamie, what a mess. What a mess this seems to be. And I think it's going to get a little messier before it gets more orderly. What do you think?
Oh, I think it's going to get a lot more complicated, you know, constitutionally, politically. We haven't even touched on the economics of this. We've got a lot of companies looking to relocate. On Thursday, Prime Minister Cameron had a meeting with 20 top business leaders saying they've got to find new markets, not fixate on Europe. One of the business leaders was the chief executive of a very successful low-cost airline, EasyJet. The next day, today, EasyJet announced that they're thinking of relocating their legal headquarters to Europe.
Jamie Dettmer, VOA's correspondent in London, and this is not the last time we will talk to you about this, I am sure. I thank you for your time and your information, as always.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
What a mess, as we said. Well, Jamie just mentioned the financial fallout from the Brexit vote. International Edition's financial reporter Jill Melandrino is joining us now live from our New York bureau. And Jill, you just heard Jamie mention some companies, especially one, that European airline, saying it was moving its headquarters out of Britain. How widespread is this? Any more than an isolated incident here and there?
Well, no, there's a handful that have been making these statements in the media. British telecom giant Vodafone is considering moving its headquarters in London out of the UK if post-Brexit negotiations with the EU won't ensure access to the EU's free movement of people, capital, and goods. So they emailed a statement out to the media saying that it would take whatever decisions are appropriate to retain access to the EU, adding that it was, however, too early to draw any firm conclusions regarding the long-term location for the headquarters. And that's a pattern of what we're seeing with many companies that have been making similar announcements. Vodafone employs over 13,000 people in the UK, and it runs an operating division in Newbury, Berkshire as well. But the headquarters are in London. But one thing you have to look at, though, Vodafone garnered 55% of its profits from its European operations, and just 11% came from the UK. So you can really see where their bread is buttered there. In the financial sector, investment banks like JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, they donated heavily to the Remain campaign, and they reacted immediately as well to the Brexit with some of the largest institutions approaching regulators to secure licenses and lining up executives to relocate from their London and UK offices into the EU if it does in fact come to that. So these are big companies making these statements, but at the end of the day, just like with public and popular opinion, there's a lot of uncertainty out there, and there really is no concrete plan yet. So these are just contingent plans. Nothing has been set in stone.
Well, overall, a week ago after the Brexit vote, we saw markets all over the world heading straight down. What your answer was uncertainty, and it's always uncertainty that makes markets go down, but things seem to be rebounding a bit.
They do, and we did talk about uncertainty, but we also said after we got that vote on Friday that as a retail investor, there's no reason to sell out of portfolios or trade around these major market events. It's the long-term averages that you're concerned about, and you didn't have to do anything. We're essentially back to where we were on June 23rd prior to the vote. Equities continue to do what they do best. They're rallying after sharp market sell-offs. We've been doing this for the past 7 years, essentially through the entire financial crisis. And the major averages have recouped all of the Brexit-related losses from last Friday and Monday. And we are looking to end the week with some solid gains here. The Dow and S&P are back over on the green side for the year. The only thing I would think about going into trade at the end of the day today, you might see a little bit of risk off or some selling going into the close, which is typical after a big week like we've had, but nothing major like we saw on the scale last Friday. But global, you know, even all the global indices did pretty well this week. We have the Dow back around 18,000, S&P 500 reclaimed the 2,100 level. I would note this, though, that defensive sectors continue to rise along with the riskier assets. So we haven't seen a major sell-off in the bonds. Gold is hanging in there pretty well. In fact, it extended its fifth weekly advance. Silver jumped to the highest since September 2014. So that's between defensive sectors doing well, and we're very, very low volume today going to the July 4th holiday. It can make it a little bit tough to trust these rallies. There's not much conviction out there when looking at the asset classes, but right now equities seem to be in that sideways to higher mode going into earnings. Not next week, the following week. That's going to be our next catalyst, is focusing on company-specific news.
Well, we know, Jill, that the reason that things are so slow today is that everybody except you and I are off on a holiday weekend in the United States. Is that correct?
Yep, we are off on Monday. And again, I think this is going to be a situation like we saw last Friday, where we had the weekend to sort of let cooler heads prevail, which is what we saw in the markets on Tuesday. So this will give global markets a chance to settle down a bit and see if there's any sort of resolution that comes out of the UK, but I think this is going to take a lot of time, a lot of patience, and again, the next catalyst that we are going to be looking at in the US is when corporate earnings kick off in the next week and a half or two, and that'll be a very welcome change for traders that can retrain their focus on stock trading and not have to focus so much on macro events such as the Federal Reserve and Brexit. It'll give us something else to look forward to.
Jill, enjoy your holiday weekend. We'll talk again next week, okay?
Okay, thanks, Ira.
Jill Malandrino, our International Edition financial correspondent, live with us in New York. And as he does every day, Andrew Palcheski, our social media editor. We have editors all over the place. But nevertheless, we've talked about Brexit the whole week long.
Yeah, it's not a good time to be in the UK, but I'll tell you where it is. A great time to be in North America.
What a transition. That was magnificent.
What a time to be in North America, and what a great transition, if I do say so. No, it's thank you. But no, two big holidays this weekend. First, today we have Canada Day, the 149th anniversary of the founding of Canada. So we're seeing a lot of social media activity on that. It's actually the top trending topic in the U.S., of course, our neighbor to the north. So a lot of people wishing our friends and neighbors a happy Canada Day, including Secretary of State John Kerry, who tweeted out a message saying that there are neighbors and allies, and we're glad to have them as such.
That's right, yes.
Yes, yes. And so a little some jokes at Canada's expense about maple syrup and things like that. You know, I saw a picture of a moose at somebody's front door and said, "Excuse me, do you have a moment to talk about Canada Day?" So people having some fun with it. But the other big holiday, of course, as Jill mentioned and you mentioned, on Monday we have the 4th of July, which is our anniversary of the founding of the United States of America. And ahead of that, we have hashtag 4th of July weekend. So people preparing to go out on the road, to go to the beach or go take to the skies to fly off on vacation. So a lot of messages about safety, be safe on the roads, safe driving, safety at the airports, especially in the wake of the attack in Istanbul, yep. A lot of concern about that. Safety with fireworks, because people are lighting off fireworks, you don't want to get hurt doing that. And then just a lot of messages about freedom in America, red, white, and blue, hot dogs, hamburgers, the whole nine yards. So we're going to be celebrating all through the weekend, and we'll be back here Monday. I think you're right, we'll be the only two people not off.
I think so. I just spoke a few hours ago with my son, who, as you know, is working in China, and he said they look for any kind of excuse for lighting fireworks and setting off fireworks, and even if it's the U.S.'s July 4th, they're setting them off in China.
And that's why it's trending. There you go.
Okay, that's a pal. What is a pal?
A pal on Twitter.
At a pal. That's APAL, your Twitter thing. Yeah, okay. Andrew Palczewski with Social Media. Among the top stories in the world, the Brexit vote has left much of Great Britain in a state of disarray. Austria's highest court has overturned the results of that country's presidential election. Tens of thousands of protesters fill the streets of Hong Kong as the city marks the 19th anniversary of its handover from Britain to China, and there are two sides to that. At least six are killed when gunmen opened fire on two buses in Kenya near the Somali border. Expanded coverage of these and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
Here's science in a minute.
As NASA's probe Juno buzzes closer and closer for its 4th of July rendezvous with Jupiter, astronomers are using the good old Hubble Space Telescope to study the planet's auroras, which are just like our own northern and southern lights. These spectacular light shows in the Jovian atmosphere hover above the giant planet's two poles just like they do on Earth. Scientists say they are created when high-energy particles, such as the solar wind or from disturbances of the sun, enter a planet's atmosphere near its magnetic poles and smash into gas atoms. NASA says that while Hubble takes care of observing and measuring Jupiter's auroras, Juno is gauging the properties of the solar wind itself. Scientists want to find out how various elements of the Jovian auroras react to different conditions within the solar wind. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. The Apple Company has recently been granted a patent that would disable an iPhone's camera temporarily. And that would prevent us from, or you, from videotaping or videoing or photographing live concerts inside the venue. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the software, which can also be used to enhance someone's experience at a museum or an art gallery.
First of all, I don't think this is a bad idea.
And I agree with you. Now, I think we may be in the minority with this, but I think in theory it's a good idea. I mean, as you say, if you've been to a concert recently, it is almost impossible to see over the phones. And we've heard a number of artists say on stage, please put your phones down or let me pose for a picture. Now can you put them down? Because I would like for you to, I always say, see me through your eyes.
Well, Adele did that. Adele was in concert, I think it was in the Netherlands or somewhere, and or maybe in Britain, and she was like, no, love, no, right, I'm right here. No, really, put the phone down. I want you to see me live. And there were some artists who have actually stopped. There are some groups who have actually stopped their concerts and walked off.
Well, sure. And Alicia Keys recently in one of her shows asked that all of the concert goers put their phones in these little lock boxes that would not be unlocked or could not be unlocked until after the show. So you could keep it on you, but you couldn't use it. So this is actually a really big deal. And not only because I think artists want you to see them, but also because they have to be mindful of protecting their art from being distributed online without their permission and, of course, without them reaping any financial benefits from its spread. This is bootlegging, essentially.
Well, it's the way it works. Let's just explain it so people understand. The way it works is there would be a series of transponders in the venue itself, and there's a certain frequency that would be transmitted by those transponders, and that would hit your iPhone.
Right.
And if you tried to take a picture or you tried to do video, then you would get something on your screen that says, this function has been disabled.
Right.
So you could still call.
Yes.
You could still text.
Yes.
You could still, you know, answer your phone. You just couldn't take any photographs and you couldn't take any video.
Yes.
I don't have any problem with that. Because back in the day, you couldn't take a camera into, like, a venue to take a picture of a concert.
Certainly.
It was on the ticket. No photography.
Yeah, and I think even, like you say, to these days, it still is on the ticket because I think artists really genuinely want people to enjoy it, but you can't take away people's phones because, again, they're almost like,
right,
you know, appendages.
It's now, well, like, that's, you know, a civil liberties matter, too.
And it is. And now I think it's also, though, important to mention that this is not only about disabling the phone. There is another function that this software can be used for, and that is, let's say you're in a museum and you point your phone at an exhibit. A lot of information about that exhibit could appear on the phone as well. So those same infrared signals, instead of disabling your phone, can enable your phone to receive information. And then there are some questions, too, especially here in the States, about whether or not giving a company the ability to disable someone's phone in public is a good idea, since we've been dealing a lot with police brutality issues and knowing that sometimes being able to videotape certain occurrences affect the outcome of whatever issue should it go to court. But if you are a live music lover, this is something I think you need to be aware of because it may affect the way you experience your show, for better or worse.
So are you a live music lover? Do you stream video, take video, or shoot photos when you go to see someone? Let us know your opinion. You can log on to our Facebook page. That's VOA Now. You can also send us a tweet. Shauna is at VOA Lady DJ or at VOA underscore music. Also, you can find Shauna's program, The Soul Lounge, on our website, voanews.com.
That music means we are plumb out of time. You've been listening to International Edition. Remember, you can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, follow us on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Pete Hanley. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The government of Bahrain has taken more troubling steps that appear aimed at stifling dissent. Most recently, a Bahraini court, at the request of the government, ordered the suspension of the opposition political society, Al-Wefaq. U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby called the decision alarming. He said, "We are following this situation closely and urge Bahraini officials to reconsider this decision. As we have consistently maintained, peaceful criticism of the government plays a vital role in inclusive, pluralistic societies." In 2011, at the time of the Arab Spring, dozens died when the government of Bahrain suppressed protests demanding more rights. Spokesperson Kirby noted that Bahrain has made some progress in addressing the concerns and grievances of its citizens since then. But Bahrain's move against Al-Wefaq is not consistent with a commitment to sustaining that progress or pursuing unfulfilled reforms, said Mr. Kirby. The United States is concerned this action against Al-Wefaq, as well as other recent decisions, including the detention of prominent human rights activist Nabil Rajab and resentencing of Al-Wefaq Secretary General Sheikh Ali Salman, will restrict freedom of expression and stunt reconciliation. Over the last 2 years in Bahrain, activists have been jailed, had their citizenship revoked, and dozens have been expelled. In February, a Bahraini court sentenced Ibrahim Sharif, former head of the National Democratic Action Society, to a year in jail on charges of insulting Bahrain's ruling system. Collectively, said Mr. Kirby, these actions divert Bahrain from dialogue necessary to ensure its security and stability, and to continue the reforms that its leadership has pursued in the 16 years since King Hamad's National Action Charter was approved. The United States has consistently said opposition parties that peacefully voice criticism of the government play a vital role in inclusive, pluralistic states and societies. Creating an atmosphere in which a full range of political opinions can be peacefully expressed is essential in Bahrain, across the Middle East, and globally.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.